From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood, a new 6-CD box set, collects Sinatra's songs from his well-known and more obscure films from 1940 to 1964. Only 10% of the tracks included on the collection have been released before in any audio format. We'll listen to and talk about some of the music with the co-producers of the box set, Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews new CDs from singers Brian Ferry and David Bowie. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Bush is preparing a major speech next week on the topic of corporate responsibility. But this week, the White House has been answering questions about the president's own past business practices. NPR's Don Gagne reports from the White House.
The questions deal with President Bush's sale of $850,000 worth of shares in Harkin Energy in 1990. Mr. Bush was on Harkin's board of directors and sold his stock weeks before the company released bad news about millions of dollars in losses in a single quarter. Required forms detailing the sale of then-Citizen Bush's shares were not filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission until the following year, 34 weeks late. According to Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, this is an old story.
You all have reported now for more than a decade. The SEC has been well aware of this issue involving the Form 4, the filing of the forms, and they've looked at all of this, and the SEC has concluded that this is not anything that's actionable.
Fleischer says there was a mix-up among lawyers, and when that was discovered, the appropriate forms were filed. Don Gagne, NPR News, The White House.
U.S. military investigators say an American warplane was fired upon before it launched the attack that allegedly killed more than 40 civilians this week in central Afghanistan. A spokesman for the investigating team, Major Gary Tallman, says an anti-aircraft in the gun was seen from the air and confirmed by U.S. troops on the ground. Tallman acknowledged that no wreckage from such a weapon has been found. Villagers say some people were celebrating a wedding when the warplane struck, injuring more than 100 people. The former president of Hale House, a prominent Harlem charity for neglected infants and children, has pleaded guilty to stealing more than $1 million from the organization. NPR's Jason Beaubien reports from New York City.
Prosecutors say Lorraine Hale stole hundreds of thousands of dollars from the charity her mother founded 30 years ago. Hale and her husband, Jesse DeVore, were also accused of diverting charitable contributions to a secret checking account for their own use and cashing in a Hale House life insurance policy worth almost $500,000. Hale House gained a reputation at the height of the crack cocaine craze of the 1980s as a haven for drug-addicted and mistreated children. The couple pled guilty in a deal which allowed them to avoid jail time. Hale and DeVore were sentenced to 5 years probation. Although their attorney says they are now destitute, they agreed to pay $700,000 back to the Hale House charity. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, New York.
Texas Governor Rick Perry has declared state disasters in 29 counties that have been hit by flooding rains. The floods in South and Central Texas are blamed for at least 3 deaths and a number of injuries. Perry called out the National Guard to help rescue flooded homeowners and motorists who'd been stranded in their cars. In stocks today, the Dow gained 47 points to close at 9,025. The Nasdaq gained 22 points. This is NPR News. Officials are now examining the flight data recorders from the 2 planes that collided over South Germany on Monday night, looking for clues to the crash that killed 71 people. The 2 planes were being monitored by Swiss air traffic control. Just last week, Swiss officials had issued a report saying that Switzerland's air traffic control radar did not meet European standards. Following the recent controversy surrounding the constitutionality of the Pledge of Allegiance, Missouri's governor has signed a bill requiring the pledge to be recited at least once a week in public schools. Missy Shelton reports from member station KSMU.
Even though the new law compels public schools in Missouri to institute a weekly recitation of the pledge, it stops short of forcing students to say it. A decision last week by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in California declared the Pledge of Allegiance unconstitutional because of the words "under God." That court decision is under review. Missouri's Governor Bob Holden says the controversy did not impact his decision to sign the bill into state law. He says he wanted to encourage students to say the pledge and think about the meaning of the words.
It's great to say the pledge, but we need to be living those values as a society every day, and that's what I'm encouraging.
The law takes effect August 28th, in time for the start of the school year. For NPR News, I'm Missy Shelton in Springfield, Missouri.
American adventurer Steve Fawcett has safely landed in a remote part of Central Australia after completing the first solo balloon flight around the world. Fawcett was forced to remain aloft last night because gusty winds made it unsafe to land. During the night, the 58-year-old balloonist had to climb out of his capsule to put out a fire. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing Novasoy brand isoflavones to consumers throughout the United States, on the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Hello there. This is Kim Novak.
Ruff, ruff. This is Frank Sinatra talking.
I'd like to take this opportunity to tell you about some wonderful entertainment that Capitol Records has to offer. It's a soundtracked album from Columbia Pictures musical production, Pal Joey, with the all-time great songs of Rodgers and Hart.
Among them, The Lady is a Tramp, My Funny Valentine.
Performed by Rita Hayworth.
Portraying one of the most colorful cats in the show business.
Frank Sinatra.
I thank you.
And myself.
That promotional spot for the movie Pal Joey is included in a new 6-CD box set called Frank Sinatra in Hollywood, 1940 to 1964. It collects his songs from such films as On the Town, Young at Heart, Guys and Dolls, and The Tender Trap, as well as more obscure films. Only 10% of the 160 tracks have ever been previously issued in any audio format. In the movies, many of these songs were in scenes where dialogue or sound effects obscured the music. The box set has the complete performances that were recorded before the other sounds were added. We're going to listen to and talk about some of the music with the producers of the box set, Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch. Granata is the author of the book Sessions with Sinatra, Frank Sinatra and the Art of Recording. Deutsch is a veteran record producer. Charles Granata, Didier Deutsch, welcome to Fresh Air. Why don't we listen to a couple of the recordings on here and compare them. And this is from the film The Tender Trap. I don't think this is a great film. And I never really used to think this was a great record until I saw the film and watched Sinatra sing the song. And it just, the rhythm of it is so contagious. So I've actually come to like the song. I thought we could hear two versions. The first version is the title sequence version, the version that's sung over the titles. Is this the same version that was the hit version that was released on Capitol Records?
No, this is the film version. The version that you heard on the Capitol recording was a re-recording that was done in the studio for Capitol at the time the film was released. So this is really the screen version.
And it does differ because for the commercial Capitol recording, Frank Sinatra used a Nelson Riddle arrangement. And you hear a big difference in instrumentation and orchestration. And there's a different energy to the Capitol recording when you compare it to the film recording. And there's a different jauntiness that I feel comes across in the film recording. It's just a little more spontaneous.
And I thought we can compare that back to back with just a piano vocal version that he does in the body of the film. And this is, if I'm remembering the film correctly, Debbie Reynolds is singing this song. I think maybe she's rehearsing it for an audition. And he's saying, no, you got it wrong. Try it this way. And he shows her how it should be done.
Right.
That's right, yes.
And of course, this piano vocal version places the performance and the song in a completely different context. Because rather than having this big band with this energetic Nelson Riddle chart, we have just Frank Sinatra and Bill Miller on piano, which gives it a whole different feel.
So here they are back to back, the title sequence of Tender Trap and a duet from the body of the film.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap.
Those eyes, those sides, they're part of the tender trap. You're hand in hand beneath the tree, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kind of smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees, that breeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap. Those eyes, those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. You see what I mean? You just gotta let it settle a little bit. You're hand in hand beneath the tree, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kind of smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees, that breeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. Wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is a tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. Wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is a tender trap.
That's two versions of The Tender Trap from the film of the same name on the new box set Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. My guests are the box set's co-producers, Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch. Now, one of the things Sinatra had to do, which I guess all performers had to do in the movies at the time, was to lip-sync to their songs. How did it work? The songs were pre-recorded, and then you lip-sync to it on film?
Well, usually, yes. They went into the studio, laid down the tracks, performed the song. Then when they started shooting, the song was played on a playback equipment so that they could lip sync and emote at the same time. So there was no huffing and puffing as they were acting. They were simply lip syncing. And that's why it comes so naturally on the screen.
Now, Charles Granata, you say in your liner notes that Sinatra hated lip syncing in the movies. Why did he hate it so much?
You know, Frank Sinatra
had a very interesting way of approaching his commercial recording sessions. He would prepare endlessly, and when he went into the studio, he would spend an inordinate amount of time working to accomplish what he felt was the perfect recording. On the film soundstage, as an actor, he had a completely different philosophy. He would want to do one or two takes because he felt doing more than that robbed his performance of its freshness. And I think the lip-syncing aspect of making films in Hollywood was a big part of that for Frank Sinatra. He felt that if he couldn't stand before the camera and perform and sing live, as it were, in this case, live to film, it didn't have the vitality that he was looking for, that he felt was necessary to emote as an actor.
Well, in his performances, normally, was there a rehearsed spontaneity in which, in the films, he was robbed? He could not have that rehearsed spontaneity?
Well, when you listen to Frank Sinatra's commercial recording sessions in toto, in other words, if you listen to him breaking down and doing take after take after take, he's obviously building the vocal style for that particular song. And you're right. In many instances, he alters things from take to take. And when he had to lip sync, he felt that he was not free to let loose and bend the lyric according to how he was feeling at that very moment.
My guests are Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, co-producers of the new box set Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, the producers of a new Frank Sinatra box set called Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. Well, a Sinatra film I particularly love is represented on here. It's called Young at Heart, and Sinatra plays a piano player, like a barroom piano player, who thinks that he's cursed with lifelong bad luck, so he's constantly depressed. And he kind of wanders into the life of Doris Day, who's this real kind of sunshiny character, and kind of try so hard to help him out of this slump. And it's a wonderful film. They even get to sing a duet together at the end. You have a few songs from this film represented in the box set. One of them is Someone to Watch Over Me. What's the story behind the version you've used on this box set, Charles?
With Someone to Watch Over Me, when we arrived in the studio in Los Angeles, we knew that we were going to find the vocal and piano performance, which is what is heard in the film. What we were surprised to find as we ran through the various session tapes is this bit of orchestral sweetening. And at first we were a little perplexed because it wasn't heard that way in the film. We didn't know that it existed. And we spent a couple hours matching it up. And our biggest accomplishment on that particular day was being able to create a brand new mix with Frank Sinatra and the orchestra married to this piano version of Someone to Watch Over Me, which I think is the most incredible Gershwin tune, you know, in their whole catalog.
And the sweetening does something that did not exist in the movie, which is very interesting. The orchestral sweetening was not entirely... they didn't use it, I think, because it was not entirely successful. There was a bridge in which the orchestra was fighting with the vocal. So what we did, when that came in, we dropped the orchestra, so there is simply the vocal singing the bridge, and then we brought up the orchestra again for the refrain, and it works beautifully. I think that it's one of the songs in that box set that I like very much as a result of the work we did on it.
It really brings a tenderness to the performance.
Yes.
So here's Frank Sinatra, Bill Miller at the piano, from the movie Young at Heart, as featured on the new box set, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood.
¶¶ There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that she turns out to be someone who'll watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch over me. Although I may not be the man some girls think of as handsome, but to her heart I'll carry the key. Won't you tell her, please, to put on some speed, follow my lead. Someone to watch over me.
That's Someone to Watch Over Me, remixed for the new box set Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. It's from the film Young at Heart. My guests are Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, the co-producers of this new box set. Now, you talk in the liner notes about the differences between Sinatra's approach to filmmaking and to making studio recordings. You actually have a rehearsal session featured on this box tape from Robin in the Seven Hoods. And it's Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr., doing the rehearsal for a song called Don't Be a Do-Batter. Actually, I think they're trying to do the final take. They're not trying to rehearse it, but it keeps not happening for them. Charles, tell us a little bit about this session and why you wanted to include it on the box.
Well, this is one of those golden moments that you unearth as you do work that Didier and I are doing. And you're scouring the vaults and searching for unusual and rare material. And the first day we were in Los Angeles and working at the Film Transfer Studio, we got a call from the Warner Brothers archivist who said he had found these unmixed session tapes from Robin and the Seven Hoods. And as you listen to the session tape, you need to remember that this is the Rat Pack. These are these three famous guys who are at the top of their game, at the top of their world in 1963, unedited and uncensored. They weren't mugging for a camera. They weren't standing going through a rehearsed routine for an audience. This was how these guys really were as friends. And I think that real spirit of camaraderie and real love and genuine affection for each other just comes through so beautifully here. And obviously, you know, this is a great chance to study how Frank Sinatra and these guys worked in the studio.
Well, the other thing that comes through is that Frank Sinatra wants to get out. He wants to stop doing takes, wants to finish it, and leave.
Absolutely, as was his wont many times. You know, as I mentioned earlier, and I mentioned in my liner notes, Frank Sinatra really was a very restless individual. And, it didn't matter whether it was in the recording studio, in front of a television camera, speaking to an interviewer on the film soundstage, when he wanted to go, he wanted to go. That was it. Nothing was standing in his way. And he was always a little bit impatient and restless. He wanted to do his work and move on.
Well, why don't we hear Don't Be a Do-Batter from Robin and the Seven Hoods with Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr.
Take it from me, don't...
Sort of cute-like, you know. Watch your Frank's
the
foot.
Downbeat.
He's closest to you.
Take it from me.
Once more. Once more. Hold it. Once more. Once more.
Now, you want to come in on with the bells, right?
Or should you?
Wherever you go,
should
like
you
that.
Start the baby,
no,
and then
no,
all of us come
no,
in?
No, no,
we'll
no.
Go.
We'll come in. It's 1, 2, 3.
Take it from me.
That's where it's going to be.
Okay.
And this ain't it. I'm going home.
Come on, let's go.
To New Jersey.
Take it from me. Don't be a do-batterer, do-batterer, do-batter. Just climb aboard that step ladder and climb the other way.
That's the way the note ends. I think your bells are flat.
No, it's us if it's down there.
What?
Let's try one more. Right. This is going to be it. I never waited as much time with a soliloquy.
Let's go.
That's an outtake from Robin and the Seven Hoods with Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr. It's featured on the new box set, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. My guests are the box set's co-producers, Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch. Listening to this session, it strikes me maybe one of the reasons why Sinatra wants to get out so badly and end the session is because it's such a crummy song. It's so unworthy of his gifts as a singer. And particularly singing this trio, it's not really like a Sinatra recording. It's not Sinatra the singer. It's just like a novelty tune.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Frank Sinatra and his films. And I think this was another part of his philosophy. Frank Sinatra always viewed his recordings for Capitol, Reprise, Columbia as being permanent and the films as being fun. And obviously with Robin and the Seven Hoods, he's mugging for the camera. Mm-hmm. It's a fun film. It's the Rat Pack. And the music reflects that.
We'll hear more of Frank Sinatra in Hollywood in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
We could go the distance and find us romance. I like your persistence, your style and your stance. There's only one problem, the tiniest problem. I like to lead when I dance. Your eyes do the speaking, they talk with each glance. My willpower's creaking, I might take a chance. And though you're the charmer, who could bend my armor? I like to leave.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Bantam Books, a division of Random House, publisher of Saving Your Brain, the revolutionary plan to boost brain power, improve memory, and protect yourself against aging and Alzheimer's by Jeff Victoroff, M.D. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more on Sinatra in Hollywood with record producers Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, and rock critic Ken Tucker reviews new CDs from David Bowie and Brian Ferry. Thank you. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, the producers of the new box set, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood, 1940 to 1964. It collects Sinatra's songs from his movies. Granata is also the author of Sessions with Sinatra. Deutsch is a longtime record producer. When we left off, we were listening to a rehearsal track of the song Do Better from the Rat Pack film Robin and the Seven Hoods. There's one point in Don't Be a Do-Batter where Sinatra says, God, you know, I didn't have to spend this much time recording Soliloquy. And what he's referring to there is that he was supposed to star in Carousel. Gordon McRae ended up making the movie. You have a recording of Soliloquy on here, but that was like a studio session. What was the story about Carousel? How was Sinatra cast in it? It seems like such improbable casting. Maybe that's because I always think of the more heavy-handed Gordon McRae in the role.
Well, at the time when Carousel was prepared, Sinatra already was a big movie star, since he had already done From Here to Eternity, and he was considered now a dramatic actor as well as a singing actor. And I think that it seemed like a good casting choice initially. What happened is that when he came to, he recorded the song If I Loved You with Shirley Jones, and he was preparing Soliloquy, which is a song he had recorded already for Columbia previously, on two different occasions, in fact. And he came to the location in Maine to do the film and was told that there would be two different shoots, one for CinemaScope and one for 35mm. And he objected to that. He said that the director would have to shoot only one scene because he was only good for one take. I think that according to Shirley Jones, one of the reasons he stepped away is because he himself felt concerned about the challenges brought on him by the role itself. And his insecurity translated into this rejection, if you want, of two shoots for the same scene. And he simply walked away and was replaced by Gordon McRae.
Poor, I bet you'd like to get your hands on these sessions, the ones that he did make for Carousel.
Well, we do have If I Loved You, and for contractual reasons, we're unable to include it. It is one of the most spectacular and beautiful recordings that Frank Sinatra ever made in his entire career.
I wish I could hear it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Well, although you can't include If I Loved You on this box set for contractual reasons, you do have a recording of Soliloquy. This is one that he cut in a recording studio. It wasn't meant to be released for the film. But it's still interesting to hear him do it because I think it's not the kind of song he'd usually do. So anything about this version of Soliloquy you'd like to say before we hear it?
Frank Sinatra had a long history with Rodgers and Hammerstein, and Soliloquy in particular. He was one of the first pop performers to begin extracting tunes from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals as early as 1943 and Carousel. And he made in 1945 a version of Soliloquy that is beautiful. It had an Axel Stordahl orchestration. It was issued as a 12-inch 78, which was very unusual for that time in terms of pop music. He also recorded Soliloquy in 1963. So right in the middle of this, these two recordings, comes this opportunity to be Billy Bigelow in the film. That doesn't come to pass. Sinatra does not record Soliloquy as part of the pre-recording process at Fox. For some unknown reason, Frank Sinatra went into the studio at Capitol Records several months before the sessions for Carousel were to commence and taped this version of Soliloquy, and we have no idea what the purpose was. It was not intended for a 45 RPM single. It was not to be part of the official film soundtrack. And when we went back to the original Capitol session tapes, what we found is that the orchestra was recorded first, and Frank Sinatra was to have overdubbed his vocal parts later. And interestingly, of the six orchestral parts that were laid down, Frank only did vocals on parts 1 and 2 and 5 and 6, and consequently, we have no complete version of Soliloquy from that Capitol recording session. However, when I went back and spoke with the recording engineer, John Palladino, who was at the helm on that particular day at the Capitol Studios, he distinctly remembered that Frank was uncomfortable with his vocalizing in some portions of the song. So he did not record those other two parts. They're not just lost. They were never recorded. But we were able to string it all together, and here we have what would have been Frank Sinatra's soliloquy from Carousel.
Well, let's hear it.
I wonder what he'll think of me. I guess he'll call me the old man. I guess he'll think I can lick every other fella's father. Well, I can. I bet that he'll turn out to be the spitting image of his dad. But he'll have more common sense than his puddin'-headed father ever had. I'll teach him to wrestle and dive through a wave when we go in the morning for a swim. His mother can teach him the way to behave, but she won't make a sissy out of him. Not him, not my boy. Not Bill. My boy Bill, I will see that he's named after me. I will. My boy Bill, he'll be tall and as tough as a tree. Will Bill, like a tree.
That's Frank Sinatra doing the soliloquy from Carousel, something he recorded in the recording studio, not for the film. And this is featured on the new box set, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. My guests are the box set's co-producers, Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Charles Granata and Didier Deutsch, producers of the new box set Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. Didier Deutsch, I'd like you to pick one of your favorite selections from this box set and tell us why you love it.
There are many, but I think that one that I particularly like is I could write a book from Pal Joey. And to briefly explain the reasons, there was when I first discovered Frank Sinatra, I was in France, I was in the Navy, and not being particularly happy about the prospect of spending 3 years in the armed forces when I only had one ambition, to come to this country and do something interesting here. So I went to the movies one day to see Pal Joey, and I had no idea what Pal Joey was all about, but there was Frank Sinatra, and he was singing, he was romancing Kim Novak, who always was a favorite actress of mine, and I discovered I could write a book. At the time, I didn't speak English, I did not understand the lyrics, I was simply taken over by the performance and the music and the whole atmosphere projected by the film, and that did it for me.
Well, why don't we hear I Could Write a Book from Pal okay. Joey.
If they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot
is just to tell them that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make two lovers of friends.
Who ever heard of singing a love song like this without a girl? Come on.
About the way you walk and whisper and look. And the simple secret of the plot is just to tell them that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers,
sing, as my book ends,
how to make two lovers of friends.
Sinatra from the film Pal Joey, it's one of the tracks featured on the new box set, Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. My guests are the box set's co-producers, Didier Deutsch and Charles Granato. Charles Granato, I'd like to close by asking you to choose one of your favorite tracks on the new box set and tell us why it's important to you.
The nice thing for me about Frank Sinatra in Hollywood as a box set is that it gives us an encapsulated view of three very different histories. First, it's a history of sound recording and the developments that were made between 1940 and 1964, where we start out using nitrate film and end up with, you know, multi-channel magnetic film and tape elements. It's also a history of the musical film genre, which is very important in tracing the development of the Hollywood history as it relates to the Hollywood history of the musicals. Third, and most important, it is a comprehensive study of Frank Sinatra's development, not just as an artist, but as a vocalist. So to me, there's three important tunes on this box set that I love particularly that document the early, the middle, and the late period in Sinatra's film history. The early period is best represented by this gorgeous rendition of A Lovely Way to Spend an Evening. It's Frank Sinatra, the crooner, first year on screen at RKO, and he gives this meltingly sweet version of a lovely tune that he didn't record in this setting. In the middle period, I absolutely adore There's a Small Hotel from Pal Joey. It's my favorite Richard Rodgers and Lawrence Hart tune. I think it's wonderful. There's this beautiful, nuanced trombone solo that just really gives the charm. And it really is very evocative of what that song is and what it was written about. And then third, and the one that I think would really be a fitting closer here, is the version of Style that was taken from Robin and the Seven Hoods. And to me, that's really the icing on the cake. It's a vocal and performance tour de force, but it's also a sonic one as well. And it's one of the high points, again, for us, remixing from six channels this incredible sonic recording and hearing Frank, Bing Crosby, Dean Martin just really blew us away. So I have to say that Style really epitomizes Frank Sinatra in Hollywood.
Well, let's hear it. Charles Granato, Didier Deutsch, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
And here's more from Frank Sinatra in Hollywood, the new box set that Deutsch and Granato co-produced.
Some people dress 'cause they like to get dressed, but you just dress to get dressed. It's only a hunch, but I'll bet you a bunch he wears suspenders, a belt, and a vest.
Am I correct in my assumption that you gentlemen find my habiliments reprehensible?
I think there's something wrong with his throat.
I told him that 6 weeks ago.
From the tip of your toes to your head, you look like an unmade bed.
Well, now, I hate to belabor the obvious, but in the interest of semantics, I'm impelled to observe that you've just indulged in a mixed metaphor.
Oh, it's a stroke.
It's a stroke, yeah.
You've either got or you haven't got style.
If you got it, you stand out a mile.
A flower's not a flower if it's wilted.
A hat's not a hat till it's tilted. You've either got or you haven't got class.
How it draws the applause of the masses.
When you wear lapels like the swellest of swells, you can pass any mirror and smile.
You've either got or you haven't got.
Got or you haven't got.
Got or you haven't got style.
You've either got or you haven't got. Got or you haven't got style.
If you've got it, you stand out of mile.
Got it, you stand out of mile.
With mother of pearl kind of buttons,
you'll look like the Astors and Hutton.
You've either got or you haven't got collapse.
Got or you haven't got collapse.
How it draws the applause of the masses.
When you wear lapels like the swellest of swells, you can pass any mirror and smile.
Stop!
You've either got or you haven't got. Got or you haven't got charm. Style and charm sort of go on and on.
They kind of go on.
Not a hat till it's tilted.
You've either got or you haven't got style.
Or you haven't got style.
Got or you haven't got
style from Robin and the Seven Hoods from the new box set Frank Sinatra in Hollywood. There's sad news in the jazz world. Ray Brown, the great bass player, died in his sleep last night. He was 75. Early in his career, he played with the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band and was the first bass player in what became the Modern Jazz Quartet. He toured with Jazz at the Philharmonic and became the bass player in pianist Oscar Peterson's trio. Brown often worked as the music director for Ella Fitzgerald, to whom he was married for several years. He made many albums under his own name. We're listening to a 1973 duet he recorded with Duke Ellington, paying tribute to Ellington's late bass player, Jimmy Blanton. Brown said Blanton's recordings inspired him to play bass.
Thank you.
Coming up, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews new CDs by Brian Ferry and David Bowie. This is Fresh Air. David Bowie and Brian Ferry, lead singer of the group Roxy Music, are 70s rock stars with new albums that try to update their images without compromising their essential styles. Rock critic Ken Tucker thinks only one of these veterans has fully succeeded.
Well, it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. If you don't know by now, and it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It'll never do somehow. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on. Don't think twice, it's all right. And it ain't no use in turning.
That's Brian Ferry applying his muted baritone to a Bob Dylan song on Ferry's new album, which is called Frantic. The album is anything but frantic. It has its share of hard-driving, electric guitar-based songs. But as has always been true of Ferry's style, it's both his ballad crooning and his canny choice of material that give his music its subtle thrill. That was true of his first cover album collection, These Foolish Things, in 1974. It was true of his homage to 30s and 40s pop standards on 1999's As Time Goes By, and it's certainly true of the lead-off cut on Frantic, a brilliantly scattered version of Dylan's It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, in which he sounds like a middle-aged man whom passionate love and heartbreak has taken by surprise and driven crazy.
You must leave now, take what you need, you think will last. But whatever you wish to keep, you better grab it back. Yonder stands your orphan with his gun, crying like a fire in the sun. Look at all the saints are coming through, and it's all.
In contrast to Brian Ferry's willingness to do the vocal equivalent of a dandy whose hair is mussed, his bow tie undone, David Bowie keeps it very buttoned up on his new album called Heathen. The collection is dominated by original material, and it reunites him with producer Tony Visconti, who oversaw such first-rate Bowie albums as Heroes and Scary Monsters. But the new tunes are timidly nostalgic, with a nod to John Lennon in the line, I Believe in Beatles, lots of sci-fi atmospherics, and allusions to his own oldies, like Space Oddity. In one new song here, Slip Away, he sounds as if he's yearning for the old days when he sings, In Space, It's Always 1982.
Oogie waits for just another day. Drags his bones to see the Yankees play. Owns by talks and flickers gray. Oh, they slip away.
The album comes to life only when he chooses a surprising cover song, like this one from the 80s post-punk band The Pixies, called Cactus. Bowie also does a nicely idiosyncratic version of Neil Young's I've Been Waiting for You, but the rest of the album is a wispy dud. Ferry, by contrast, does a startlingly good cover of Lead Belly's Goodnight Irene and includes a few terrific new originals, foremost among them the gorgeous I Thought, a collaboration with his old Roxy Music member, Brian Eno.
I thought you'd be my streetcar named Desire, my way, my taste of wine. I thought you'd be that flame within the fire, one dream that just won't die. All night I've looked.
Ultimately, Brian Ferry seems to have a better grasp than David Bowie does of what people might want to hear, which is old-fashioned music close to the performer's heart, as opposed to music that evokes old fashions.
Ken Tucker is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Thallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Roberta Shurrock, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Jessica Chu, and Lauren Krenzel. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
I asked your mother for you. She told me that you was too young. I wished you, Lord, I'd never seen your face, heard your lying tongue. Irene, good night. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. See you in my dream. Sometimes I live in the country. Sometimes
support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Louis Armstrong used to say he was born on the 4th of July. On the next Fresh Air, we listen to rare Louis Armstrong home recordings with Michael Cogswell, director of the Louis Armstrong House and Archives. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.